So I went up to her at the lunch counter and asked if she wanted to work with me. She knew the creative directors on Nike, Ryan and Alberto, and, you know, we got a hold of a brief, sort of stole it, is what we like to say, because we weren't officially assigned on it. We got a hold of it. Someone emailed it to us, and then we emailed them and said, can we work on it just as an exercise? It'll just be purely exercise. We don't expect to send it to the client. We just, you know, I've said I want to be an art director, and she likes to say that she emailed them, and the first thing Alberto wrote back was, who's Emma? We worked on it after hours, and we shared a ton of ideas, and then we sold one for a LeBron brief. It was a brief that people had been working on for a while, and no one had quite cracked yet, and I remember the day they told us we were going to send it show to the client, Jordan and I both went in the bathroom and cried.
That's right, everybody. Your eyes are not deceiving you. We have legendary creative Emma Barnett on the show today, and she's going to break down her creative process and probably also your heart when you see how smart and talented and charming and intelligent and incredibly talented she is. Did I say talented twice? Well, it deserved it. And in case you didn't know, here's just a few of the Nike spots that she's done.
Women will conquer more than just the soccer field, like breaking every single glass ceiling and having their faces carved on Mount Rushmore. And then we'll keep fighting not just to make history, but to change it forever.
Fine. Show them what crazy can do.
Cleveland on three. 1, 2, 3. Mamba out.
Better. Forever.
So stick around for Emma Barnett.
It's Jason Bagley's advertising podcast. He interviews important people, it's true. But that doesn't mean that you're not important, 'cause he didn't choose to interview you. Maybe he was just planning to contact you to interview you on another day. Or maybe he doesn't have your email address. Every creature on the planet is important in their own special way. Cows, sharks, and gazelles deserve to be interviewed. Birds and whales each have a valid point of view. I mean, they're probably not as interesting to talk to as you, but you're less interesting than the person on this show. It's true, I'm not sure what my point is.
Emma Barnett, welcome to Bagley Talks to an Important Person. If you didn't already know, you are a bona fide, legitimate, important person. How does that feel?
It feels pretty good. Thanks for having me on the podcast. I didn't know I was important, so I'm glad to find out today on this Thursday at 11:24.
This is the day that will live on in infamy. I've known for a long time you're important because as ECD, I got to sit in a lot of resourcing and, you know, deciding on who gets what creatives on their briefs. And Emma Barnett was a very in high demand creative to have on briefs. And Ryan and Alberto, the creative directors on Nike, very wisely almost never let you go. They were like, we always had to ask, you know, the CDs, hey, can we borrow Emma? And they were like, nope, can't borrow Emma. We're keeping her on everything all the time. So you are, it's well known your talents at Wieden & Kennedy. Speaking of Ryan and Alberto, I did reach out to them and asked them to tell me some things about you that I could talk about. And Ryan, I'm going to quote Ryan O'Rourke said, ask her about Basket Plus Ball Inc. Quite possibly the worst Nike idea I've ever seen.
Yeah. Love reliving this. I was joking, but I guess everyone who says I was joking after the fact maybe wasn't joking at first. Pretty self-explanatory. Basketball themed advertising agency named Basket and Ball. And LeBron James was the ECD. Kevin Durant wanted to be a copywriter. Kyrie Irving worked there. They had jump balls. They worked out in the gym. They presented to the client. It was a really fun script. I don't know why they didn't like it, but they printed it out and they hung it up in their office, I think, as like a warning to people for
to haze you.
To do, but
it was to
I
haze
should find
you.
It. Yeah. God. Yeah.
That is funny. I mean, it's kind of true to life. It seems like basketball players keep starting ad agencies. So I think there's some, some
truth. Yeah, at the time. You're right. That's true. I was ahead of the curve.
But I'll share a little nicer quote. Ryan also said, I mean, she's one of the best creatives I've ever worked with at finding her own brief. She takes a brief and keeps going until she reshapes it into something with a unique spin on the familiar. She often does both the planning and the creative jobs on her projects, which is pretty impressive. So that's a very nice compliment really from a very talented creative director.
Yeah, that's very nice. He was one of my mentors and still is. He and Alberto, and I learned a lot from both of them.
So I have a bunch more questions, but I think I'm going to just hand it over to you to give a little introduction, and then I'll interject as I have questions.
Okay. So when you gave me this assignment, I treated it very much like a brief that I would get at work. And you said you wanted to hear me talk about my process to sort of illuminate that even for someone with a lot of experience, you know, we don't come up with ideas magically in a vacuum, that it's really hard and we struggle. Yeah, so I am doing 10 things I hate about advertising and how to hate them less, which if you don't know the reference, probably dated myself, but 10 Things I Hate About You, great film with the late Keith Ledger in it. So I'm Emma Barnett. I'm an associate creative director at Wieden & Kennedy on the Nike account. I've been doing this for 10 years and I do love it. I've worked with some incredibly talented people, had amazing mentors, and traveled the world. And even though the process gets easier over time, it can still be really hard. So here are 10 things I hate about advertising and how to hate them less.
We'll get back to Emma and Jason in a moment, but if you want to listen to the full 2 hour and 20 minute interview with Emma and all other full episodes of Bagley Talks to an Important Person, check out Creative Mega Machine, Jason's exclusive 8-week creative coaching and mentorship program where Jason throws 6 metric tons of highly illegal, non-EPA approved rocket fuel on your career. Creative Mega Machine is a time machine for your career, teaching you exactly how to get the best work of your life about a decade earlier than you would otherwise. Through on-demand lessons and live Q&As with Jason, he will personally answer all your questions as he reveals all the secrets and techniques that he and his teams use to create iconic campaigns for Nike, Old Spice, KFC, Meow Wolf, and more. You will learn in 8 weeks what took him 16 years at Wieden & Kennedy to learn. There is absolutely nothing out there that will accelerate your creativity and earning potential faster than this 5-star rated program. Classes are capped at 20 students, so grab your spot before they're gone. Check out the show notes below to learn more about Creative Mega Machine. Let's get back to the podcast.
Number one, I hate how hard it is to break into. I started as a studio designer on Nike basketball, and at the time it was almost impossible to become an art director from being a designer, and I was told to go to ad school, and that while I really tried harder than anyone else, I should eventually try to do something else, which was really discouraging. The moment I walked into Wieden, I was like, I want to be an art director, and it was really difficult. It was not easy to do that. Eventually Ryan O'Rourke, one of my mentors, this creative director on Nike, he sort of got wind that I wanted to be a creative. And I remember riding my bicycle and he gave me a phone call and he said, Emma Barnett, this is Ryan O'Rourke, creative director on Nike. And I hear you want to be an art director. And I probably nearly fell off my bicycle.
It's amazing. I think should be inspiring to anyone out there struggling to like get in, or even you're already in and you're hoping to get to a better place, or that now, you know, one of the most respected art directors and creatives in the industry was basically told, give up, go do something else, which is incredible.
Yeah, it was a real mixed bag. You know, there were some creative directors who were supportive. Don Shelford was another one. But some creative directors just said, I should go to ad school. And other people said eventually, you know, think about something else. And it was frustrating, especially because I really thought I could do it if I were given the chance. Ryan sort of got wind that I wanted to be an art director. And around the same time, I had been working on a project called Summer is Serious for Nike Basketball as a designer, and a junior strategist named Jordan Dinwiddie was working on it as a copywriter. So I went up to her at the lunch counter and asked if she wanted to work with me. She knew the creative directors on Nike, Ryan and Alberto, and, you know, we got a hold of a brief, sort of stole it, is what we like to say, because we weren't officially assigned on it. We got a hold of it. Someone emailed it to us, and then we emailed them and said, can we work on it just as an exercise? It'll just be purely exercise. We don't expect to send it to the client. We just, you know, I've said I want to be an art director. And she likes to say that she emailed them, and the first thing Alberto wrote back was, who's Emma? But they let us work on it. We worked on it after hours, and we shared a ton of ideas. And then we sold one for a LeBron brief. It was a brief that people had been working on for a while, and no one had quite cracked yet. And I remember the day they told us we were going to send it show to the client, Jordan and I both went in the bathroom and cried.
Oh, that's sweet.
Which is one of the first of many times that we've cried together. Yeah.
City, we gotta do it for them, dog. We gotta do it for Cleveland. They're waiting on us. What we do tonight is gonna define what we're about. Let's get it going. Every single night, every single practice, every single game, we gotta give it all we got. Because they're going to ride with us. Everything that we do on this floor will be because of this city. We owe them. We're going to grind for this city. They're going to support us, man, but we got to give it all back to them. We get it done. The toughness that we have on the court is going to come from this city. Everybody, the whole city of Cleveland, that's what it's all about. It's time to bring them something special. Let's go. Bring it on in, everybody. Let's go. Let's go. Hard work on three, together on six. One, two, three.
Hard work.
Four, five, six.
Together.
Hard work on three, together on six. One, two, three.
Hard work.
Four, five, six.
Together.
Here we go, man. Hard work on three, together on six. One, two, three.
Hard work.
Four, five, six.
Together.
Together.
Let's get it. It's all us. Cleveland on three. One, two, three.
I mean, what a cool story. And I think, again, a lesson to be learned there for people is, like, be ambitious. Put yourself out there. Like, do whatever you got to do. I'm always telling people, like, if you aspire to do a type of work or a level of work that you're not being allowed to do at the place that you're at, like, do spec work, do work nights, weekends. That's how I got into Wieden & Kennedy. I didn't go to portfolio school, and I worked nights and weekends to get a bunch of fake work together, 'cause I knew that was the only way it was going to happen. But that's, you know, ambition goes a long way.
Yeah, it does. Actually, Ryan, my mentor and creative director, who you quoted earlier, one of the things he likes to say is that the reason I became an art director is because I was annoying, which is, you know, he says that a lot of people have come to him over the years and said they want to be creative, and but he never really hears from them again. And I was really persistent. I have another funny story. A different creative director I wanted to, who was going to sort of maybe give me something to work on, Don Shelford. I recently told him this story actually like 10 years after it happened, but he offered to meet with me, and I went up to his office, and I was sitting in his office in a sort of open air office, and I was really nervous and just anxious. You know, when the CDs come down to the studio, when you're a designer, it's kind of like royalty shows. Like before they, it's like, oh, they're coming, you know, and they come on, they walk in and everyone's looking. It's just this real, like they roll out the red carpet. And I was really nervous, and I was sitting in his office waiting. And then I heard the voice of my current boss in studio, who was a really nice guy, but I was so nervous that he was going to get upset that I wanted to be an art director, that I hid in Don Shelford's office behind his bookshelf. And I hid in his office. I heard the voice of my current boss. I hid there, and Don came in, and he looks down and he's like, what are you doing? And I was like, I'm just looking at these books. This disco book seems really interesting. What's the story here? And he had no idea that I was hiding in his office until recently. And I told him drunkenly at a party. I was like, you know, I hid in your office one time. But yeah, I don't think that's like a thing unique to Wyden and Kennedy. And, I think it's the industry. And I think especially for women getting in the creative department was difficult. Coming in from a studio position was difficult, but at the same time, even though I got resistance, eventually, you know, you find the right people and you find people willing to invest in you. And I think that's why you have to be persistent, because there will be people who want to give you a chance, who see what you're up to, who are willing to take the time to teach you. And I wouldn't be where I am if, you know, Ryan and Alberto hadn't decided to give me a chance and, you know, sold an idea through, which helped. But don't give up, because there will be people who want to invest in you.
Well, one of the things I talk about is that the best creatives in the world are relentless, unstoppable forces. That's one of
we're annoying.
Yeah, and it really is true. I look at myself and I always say, I don't think I was anywhere near the most talented person at any agency. And yet I think I was willing to be more annoying. I was willing to be, I just wouldn't stop. And I think that is kind of, if I have any secret to any success, it's just don't stop. Just want it bad enough and don't be afraid to be annoying, and err on the side of being too annoying rather than sitting back and just complaining and thinking, well, I tried, it didn't work. Just keep trying until it does work, and just keep going until you find somebody who will give you that shot and that will believe in you and give you a chance.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I feel like this whole presentation could have just hinged on me being annoying, because, you know, whether it's from the start of my career to being on production to working, you know, I feel like being annoying gets the job done, you know. And it's, I think for women, it's also, you know, there's a bit of a double-edged sword, because what men experience as assertive and demanding and, you know, or assertive and confident and passionate, you know, women are construed as irritating or complaining or whiny, you know. So I've had to, and I've made work about that specifically. So I do think, especially at the time, I think it was very scary for me to put myself out there like that. But I remember a very vivid memory when I was in high school, one of my classmates being like, God, Emma's annoying. And now look where it's gotten me.
It's an asset.
Yeah. The most annoying art director in advertising.
But I think there's a fine line between persistence and annoyance. And like I said, I would, if you got to err on the side of being annoying, do it. Because I like people that are just kind of relentless, and they can't be stopped.
Yeah. I agree. I do too. So anyway, we sold an idea. It was a huge production. It was terrifying. Well, we can talk about it, I guess, later when I show that work. But the second, the second thing I hate starting. And I, it was funny when you briefed me on this, I was like, oh, how am I going to figure out my process? You know, like, I know I live it, but like, how am I going to distill it? And I realized, you know, in going on this show and preparing this presentation, I was doing my process, because the very first thing I did, as soon as you said, you know, would you like to be on the show? Would you mind preparing something? Was I closed my computer and pretended it never happened and ignored it for the next like day and a half. And I was like, oh, okay. I guess the first part of my process is that I really hate starting. and I'm not much of a procrastinator. I think when I get started, it's almost the anxiety to not get it done overwhelms the fear of starting. And I do start. I don't wait till the last second, but it definitely takes me a minute to get going. As soon as I get a new project, I ignore it. I clean, I exercise, I have an appointment. I can't tell you how many times I've canceled a meeting because I have an appointment, which I hope none of my project managers watch this. I super glue something that I broke 6 years ago. I do everything except work. And then eventually I do start. Because I think, I don't know, I've talked to a lot of creatives about this, but, and some people don't have this, but sometimes when I get a brief, I'm filled with so much dread and I'm just like, oh my God, I'm not going to be able to do it. Even if it's an exciting brief.
Maybe especially if it's an exciting brief.
Yeah. Which is something I get into. It's, you know, working on Nike, it's a high bar and a lot of the briefs are really exciting. And so every time I get one, I'm just like, holy shit, this is the, I can't do it. This is the time I'm discovered to be a fraud. And, I think because of that, I also think it's partially just like milking whatever freedom I have left until I have to start working. After I get a brief, I just like, oh, if I just have a couple more hours just of freedom before I really have to get going. So I try to take advantage of that. And I sort of tell my copywriter, just, you know, go away for a little while. And I think too, sort of gesturing at self-care and things that you want to do for yourself a little bit before you get started helps a little with the work-life balance so that you don't feel too immediately swamped. So that's eventually I get a brief, I start, and I started working on this assignment. Number three, I hate bad briefs. Once I start, I complain about the brief. It's not true. It's too complicated. It's fluffy. And sometimes you get a bad brief, but you don't know if it's a bad brief until you work on it. And if it is a bad brief, come up with your own. And I think this is really important because, you know, strategy works very hard to come up with an insight into whatever it is you're working on. And sometimes they have a really great insight, but maybe the brief line isn't exactly conducive to coming up with great ideas. And there's been many times I've gotten a brief where on paper you look at it and you think, hey, that seems pretty good. But until you start coming up with ideas on a brief, you won't know if it's a good brief. And you have to pressure test it. And it took me many years to realize that if I wasn't coming up with great ideas on a brief, as someone who can consistently come up with ideas, if I wasn't coming up with anything good at all or was really, really struggling, maybe there was something wrong with the brief. One of my favorite ads that I did, Dream Crazier, which was about, you know, women being called crazy, which we can watch later, was a brief that I just came up with. I knew they needed to come up with something revolving around crazy dreams for Nike. They had just done the Dream Crazy campaign with Colin Kaepernick and they wanted to do something that focused on women. And I thought, well, I hate being called crazy, but being crazy has gotten me where I am today. And that became the idea and that became the brief. And that became the ad that, you know, went on to win a lot of awards and really impact a lot of women, which was really meaningful to me, being in an industry that is not necessarily always historically focused on championing women, yeah. I guess.
And a phenomenal campaign. I love that campaign.
That's the competitor burning brightly in him.
Oh, now we've got gamesmanship going on. Oh, do shut up, Elena.
I have so much love and respect for Kyle Busch's passion.
We got a great cat fight for you. Saucer of milk party of two.
You seem to be getting better round by round.
Can you give us a twirl and tell us about your outfit?
Made it about gender.
She would not let it go.
We'll be back in a moment.
If we show emotion, we're called dramatic. If we dream of equal opportunity, we're delusional. And if we get angry, we're hysterical, irrational, or just being crazy. But a woman running a marathon was crazy.
Officials tried to pull her off the course.
Have you seen Serena Williams' new Nike commercial?
Honestly, I had friends, people on social media, talking about how they were showing their daughters that commercial. You know, and being like, oh, my daughter, she wants to be crazy too now.
A woman running a marathon was crazy.
So if they want to call you crazy, fine. Show them what crazy can do.
I think it's healthy and productive, even if the brief ends up being a good brief, but to just start out with those questions and maybe a bit of skepticism instead of just being like, well, this is the brief. I guess that's the brief. I guess there's nothing I can do about the brief. It must be a true brief. Like, you're better off just saying like, well, is that true? Is that authentic? Like, is that how people really feel? Just ask those questions. You may find the answer may eventually be like, yeah, it is true. And it's actually a really good insight. But I think asking a lot of questions and being skeptical about the brief is productive. You're going to have, that's going to generate thoughts and ideas. And so, yeah, I love that you do that. And I think, you know, speaking to strategists out there as well, and I think pretty much all good strategists feel the way I'm about to explain, but the brief should not be set in stone. It should be something that can evolve and change. And hopefully there's a collaboration between the strategist and the creatives and like some give and take and just talking it out. And if necessary, there's a great strategist will completely change the brief if they have conversations with the creatives and there's like a new insight is unlocked that they think is great. So,
yeah, I mean, leaning on strategy too is a huge asset. You know, sometimes when we get a brief and we work on it and it's not productive or you just want to talk about it or tweak it. Like you were saying, strategy is a huge resource. You don't have to come up with it on your own. You can go back to strategy and say, well, this part, you know, trust your gut. This part feels a little off to me. I don't know if that's true. Or they sort of help you set the stage in your brain for coming up with ideas. And sometimes, you know, the client sees the brief, the client approves the brief. And if the client is expecting a particular point of view, sometimes you come up with an idea that has nothing to do with the brief, and strategy can help you kind of reverse engineer it back into the brief so that you can present it. And sometimes that just takes a couple of sentences to explain how this idea that seems completely unrelated is actually really, really related to the brief that you initially wanted us to solve. Number three, I hate amazing briefs. This is some Top Gun underwear, which is a great movie if you haven't seen an IMAX. Sometimes you get a really amazing brief, the kind that everyone wants to work on. But you don't crack it right away, and suddenly everyone is working on it, and then you're all competing, and it's a huge pressure cooker, and you're freaking out because tomorrow's the check-in, and what if you literally never think of another good idea ever again? And this speaks to what we were talking about earlier, that, you know, sometimes the best briefs are the hardest because you end up putting a tremendous amount of pressure on yourself. And this happens to me a lot. I feel like oftentimes I come up with my best ideas for briefs that are really low stakes, because there's just less, nothing kills creativity like a ton of pressure, for me, at least. Some people thrive under pressure. But if I feel like I'm competing with my coworkers and I'm looking at their ideas to see what they came up with, and I'm not having any fun because suddenly my self-worth and my self-esteem are really tied into what idea I come up with, I'm never gonna come up with anything. My boss, Alberto Ponte, he always says that if you try to come up with an amazing idea, you're never going to find it. And you'll be a lot more miserable in the process.
Absolutely.
Because, and he knows me very well, in my process, I tend to get so fixated on coming up with the next great idea that I lose sight of the fun, meandering process that you have to take to get there. And just writing small ideas out and going down this way. And it's really paralyzing if you think, I have to come up with the next great Nike idea that's going to change the world. Because very often the briefs do say that. You know, I got a brief once that said, Nike wants it to be like the moon landing. And I was just like, the moon landing? This is advertising, you know? Like, okay.
Yeah. Definitely a way to shut down creativity, is just come up with the best ad ever. Like,
yeah.
If you're thinking about that, you're not going to come up with the best ad ever.
Yeah, it's really difficult. And it sucks to feel like you're competing against people. It's, you know, there's been times where you're working on a brief and it gets down to the wire, you haven't cracked it. And all of a sudden, there's an all agency email that says, hey, we've got a jump ball. If anyone wants to throw an idea in the ring, and you're up against 500 people who are now like pitching ideas for the brief you couldn't crack over like 2 months, you know, that sucks. It's hard for everybody. So I would suggest trying to have as much fun as possible and not focusing on the end result so much.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. That's something I love to tell creatives, and I'm just a broken record about, is if you can just focus on coming up with a lot of ideas and don't judge yourself in that process, when you're in the process, just take all that pressure off yourself of coming up with a quote unquote great idea and just come up with tons of ideas. And then later you can put on your editor hat and go through and decide which have any merit. But you just end up paralyzing yourself if during the creative process you're putting that much pressure and judgment. Like, just completely forget about the fact that it's the Super Bowl or that it's a big Nike brief that's supposed to be amazing. And just be playful and come up with tons of ideas with no judgment on whether they're even good or not at that point. And then later you can come back and do that. But it's just, I find that almost universally, that kind of pressure shuts down most creative people.
Yeah, I agree. It does. If you're lucky enough to work with a creative that you know, you can make each other laugh, that's like, use that, you know, like if you can make each other laugh, like you're having a fun time, like go out to lunch and work or go for a walk or go to a movie together. If you can make each other, I've come up with the best ideas with people when we're just fucking around and goofing off, you know, because the brief, when you have the brief and you have all that information in your brain, it's still there. And I talk about this a little more later, but like, it's all, the stage is all set. You've got it all in your brain. And then when you let your brain just relax and you laugh for a second, or you make a joke or you talk about something else, that's when your brain starts to fire off new connections for new interesting ideas that you wouldn't have thought of. And then you're suddenly like, wait, maybe that's the thing. Wait, should we just take that thing we were just joking about? And like, maybe that works for the idea. You know, like, you got to let your brain enjoy itself. But that being said, you know, I totally understand. And I spent many years, especially at the beginning of my career, being very worried that if I didn't come up with another idea, they were going to fire me. You know, that you're only as good as your last idea kind of mentality. And That's not fun either. So I understand that it's difficult for sure.
Yeah, totally.
And it still happens. Sometimes I don't crack a brief.
Emma Barnett sometimes doesn't crack a brief. What?
I don't. I didn't crack the last brief that I worked on, actually. Because it was a huge pressure cooker. It was a 50th anniversary for Nike. And the team that sold the idea was a great idea. And I remember looking at it being like, fuck, that's a really fun idea. And I had an idea that I really liked in the end. I was really proud of it. But it wasn't the right tone, so I didn't make it. But it was a really tough brief because when they come to you and they say 50th anniversary of Nike, go, you're just like, I mean, that's the brief that people would kill to work on, you know?
Yeah. 50th anniversary of the greatest brand probably to ever exist. Go. No pressure.
Yeah. No pressure. And you're just like, holy fuck, you know? It was hard. That's a hard brief. It's like the biggest, most exciting, magical, once-in-a-lifetime briefs are the hardest briefs to do because they're just so much pressure. How am I doing? Am I doing
You're doing great.
Does it seem natural?
No, this is
okay,
great.
Cool. Okay, cool.
Super helpful.
Okay. Number four, I hate not knowing. So my darkest secret is that I don't know anything about sports. I'm the Larry David one, and that's Jordan Dinwiddie, my copywriter. We've had this on our office, this photo on our office, for many, many years. I remember when they hired me to work at Wyden on Nike basketball as a designer, my boss asked me, my then boss asked me, well, I grew up in New York City. I should have said that. I grew up in New York City. I lived in Portland for a long time. I went to college here. But he said, you like basketball? And I was like, yeah, I love basketball. Huge Knicks fan, which should have been a dead giveaway because nobody likes the Knicks anymore. And if you do like the Knicks, it's weird to even New Yorkers. I started working on Nike and I didn't know anything about sports. I was never a sports fan. I'm an athletic person. I like exercising. I bike a lot. I used to bike competitively when I was in high school. But I'm not a sports fan. So I came into it really blind. And when I get a brief, I have to do a lot of research and I lean on my coworkers who know a lot about sports. Not knowing about the topic can be a huge asset because ideas are a lot more interesting when you come out of left field. Sports. Sports. I think that's a sports phrase. Although I don't know what.
Yes, left field.
I don't really know what that means. What does that mean? Do you know anything about baseball?
It's a baseball term. It's a part of the field, Emma.
Okay. I've heard, yeah, it's the other one, the right, opposite of right. Every time I get a brief, I know a lot more about sports than I did when I started. I'll say that. And I know a lot more about specific athletes. But every time I get a brief, I really have to educate myself. And I kind of call it setting the stage, where I stuff my brain full of a lot of information. So to sort of recap, I dread starting. I eventually start. I complain about the brief for a while. And then I spend a bunch of time educating myself about the topic. Very often on Nike, we get briefs for athletes that are new athletes that I don't know anything about, that are up and coming, and I have to learn about their history, their families, what they're good at, what their strengths and their weaknesses are. Sometimes it's an athlete like LeBron James who's at a particular point in his career, and I have to learn about, like, well, what does this moment in his career mean in relation to the rest of his career? And how, you know, all of those things you can read about and learn about. Sometimes there's technical things about sport that I just don't know. And that's where my coworkers, some of whom really love sports and know a lot of, Jordan Dinwiddie, my copywriter, she knows everything about basketball. And I can pitch her an idea and she can filter it through the lens of basketball and write it in a way that makes sense for basketball and basketball culture. Because if it were up to me, I'd be like, and then he throws the ball, you know, like whereas she can make it specific to the actual sport. I'm trying to come up with an example of like, well, what would she say? And I still can't even do it. but I think, like, I don't know. There's a four-point line.
I think what you're saying is so important, though, and it's a big part of, I think, Wyden's belief system, because Dan, you know, one of the Wydenisms is walk in stupid every morning. And
yeah,
Dan has always been a big believer that it's rarely the experts that have the brilliant new creative insight or creative execution. It's usually, if you look throughout like a lot of art and history and science, it's often somebody who's coming in. I mean, this is why immigrants have been kind of the lifeblood of ingenuity in the United States, because they come in with a totally different insight and a different, they're not stuck with like, this is the way everything has to be done. They're coming in and like, well, why don't we try it a different way? And I think the fact that you don't know a lot about swords, it reminds me of Joe Staples being the CD on Chrysler. Joe Staples was British, didn't have a driver's license, had never driven a car, and he was the creative director on Chrysler, and that insight is incredible. And I think, of course, you need people on Nike that know sports, but I think obviously it's worked brilliantly to have somebody who is not a huge fan of sports, and I think that it's really important. It's that people realize you don't necessarily, sometimes your ignorance is the most interesting thing. And, you know, some of my best creatives that I hired on Old Spice back in the day, you know, a male grooming brand, were women, you know, Chen and Ruth Bellotti and Ashley Davis Marshall. And, mm-hmm. you know, they came at it from a slightly different point of view, and that worked.
Yeah. I mean, it's important to, If they only had people working on Nike that only lived and breathed sports and Nike commercials, you wouldn't get anything interesting. You know, like, there has to be a mix of people that have other interests. And I might not know a lot about sports, but I can bring in all sorts of other references and viewpoints. And I think that mix can really make for a really interesting point of view, and you get something new and fresh that you wouldn't have thought of before. Otherwise, it can be really regurgitating of the same kind of fodder over and over again. So, you know, it's really valuable to not knowing is a huge asset. And if you care about it, you can learn about anything. And it's fun to dive into a brief and be like, well, what's this person's story? Like, why are they an interesting athlete? And where do they come from? And usually in the moments when I'm doing the research, regardless of what the brief is, that's where I find the interesting thing I want to talk about and what I want to do an idea on. When you really dive in and you learn about something, you're like, oh, that's an interesting thing that this person has that someone else doesn't. This is what makes them unique. Like, I want to come up with an idea about that. So it's really important to sit down and don't just take what the brief gives you, but really spend some time doing some, if you get a brief about really unique kind of toothpaste, you know, really dive into toothpaste and why is that toothpaste different than other toothpaste, and where did it come from, and who invented it, and who have they tested it on? And, you know, like, there can be something interesting about anything, I guess, if you spend the time to research it.
For sure.
Toothpaste. Number five, I hate getting stuck. That's me. That's Pooh Bear, which maybe also dates me. I don't know if kids like Winnie the Pooh anymore, but we all get stuck, even people with a lot of experience. Getting stuck sucks. So how do I get unstuck? I stop. And this is, I think, a really important thing to learn. And it's really difficult because it's really counterintuitive. But if you are working for hours and hours and hours and hours, and you're banging your head against the wall and you haven't come up with anything, you think, well, I just got to keep working. I just got to keep going, and then I'll come up with something. But you absolutely probably should stop, because you need to let your brain rest. And, you know, you've set the stage, you've pumped it full of tons of information and thinking about the topic. So it's still working even when you aren't. And very often you might think of your next best idea in the shower. So you should always keep your notebook in the shower, which actually, one of my copywriters does have a waterproof notebook in her shower. And I keep a notebook next to my bed, actually. I came up with a lot of the thoughts for this presentation one night at like before falling asleep at like 1 a.m, which was inconvenient to say the least, but I thought of them and I was like, oh, now I got to turn the light on and write this down. But I think it's really important to stop. It's like, you got to do something else, you know, go to a movie, take a break, read a book, get some exercise. That's a huge one for me. Very often I'll work and you're sitting there and you're sitting at your desk and then go get some physical activity and suddenly you think of an idea while you're exercising. It's kind of incredible. And I don't know a lot about sports, but I will say I love moving my body and I love yoga and exercise and all sorts of stuff. And, I do think even just that helps working on Nike because I might not be a competitive athlete, but I understand the value of wanting to push yourself harder physically, the benefits of exercise. Like I understand what drives people to do it. And I've always been someone who's like that. So, I do at least understand that part of it.
Yeah. Your subconscious mind is usually a lot more interesting than you are. I think that's kind of what I'm taking away from the slide.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you need to give your brain a chance to form connection, you know, like here, I think, do I talk? No, I don't talk about it yet, but you got to give yourself a chance to just form connections when you wouldn't have thought of it. Like just literally stare at the wall, just let your brain just chill out for a second and take a break. Number six, I hate being alone. We all need alone time, but we can't work in a vacuum. It takes a lot of people to make an idea come to life. Ask for opinions, ask for help, listen to people when they bring up a problem. If they don't get your idea, the real world probably won't either. and, you know, I'm an only child and I like being alone and I certainly need a lot of alone time, but I think maybe because I'm an only child, I used to think I had to do everything myself, especially at work. I would try to come up with ideas alone. I wanted to sort of prove that I could do it alone. That if I could figure it out by myself, I would be that much more impressive. But it's really stunting. Creativity does not happen in a vacuum. You have to talk to other people. You have to go ask someone else, like, hey, what do you think of this brief? What does it make you think of? Or, you know, ask your mom what she thinks. And people come up with all sorts of stuff and they throw things at you you wouldn't have expected. And when you're making an idea happen, it's invaluable to have people who can give you their opinion on something, who, you know, and the higher up you get and the more experience you get too, it's, you realize that like everyone who's working with you wants to be a part of the project. You know, it's their project too. And they want to feel ownership over it and they want to feel like they've contributed. And having allies in those people to make the work better is really, really important. You know, I used to sort of cross my arms and be like, I'm going to do it myself and strategy doesn't get it. Da, da, da. And then I started to realize like that wasn't helping anybody. It's a lot more helpful to be like, hey, what do you guys think of this idea? What would you change about it? You know, and to a degree, like you know, I think you don't have to listen to everything everyone says, but I think having conversations about ideas makes them a lot stronger.
So Emma,
so you don't have to do it all alone.
I totally agree with you, but how do you balance that seeking of input from other people with trusting your own voice and trusting what you think is right creatively? As opposed to, you know, on the extreme end of that, you're just like focus grouping and like whatever the focus group says, that's what I'm going to do to my work, which I know you don't do that. So how would you explain, how do you take in that feedback while still being true to yourself and true to your gut of what you think as a creative person is right?
It's difficult. I think one of the things that I struggle with the most is trusting myself. And it's taken many years of practice to be in really tough situations where I had to just trust myself and it's worked out, or I haven't trusted myself. And then someone else has come in and said, hey, we should do that thing. And I had been thinking it the whole time, but I didn't say it. Those kinds of experiences teach you like, hey, I have good instincts. And you know, when people listen to your instincts and they say, that does make sense. That also, you know, that also helps. I think like, that's why the conversations are important. But it's hard. It's hard to trust yourself. I have trouble trusting myself all the time, with everything. And probably just experience of going through it enough times and realizing, like, the times that you have really fought for something that you knew was difficult to get. But, you know, like on production, like there's been times where I've fought for something and I was like, oh, this is really throwing a wrench into things, but I really think we need it. And it's worked out. Those moments, I think, help you build a lot of trust in yourself. But yeah, I mean, it's hard. I've always been someone who asks everyone, what do you think? You know, like, do you like this idea? I seek approval in other people, and it's a good exercise for me to be like, I'm just going to do it and I'm not going to ask everyone what they think and let the cards fall where they may. You know, it's hard.
Yeah. I think, our voice gets stronger through making decisions. And so I think what can be really helpful for creatives is, like, force yourself to have an opinion about as many things as possible when it comes to your work, and force yourself to think. Cause I was somebody who didn't naturally. So, like, my partner, Eric Baldwin, Eric doesn't have to force himself to have an opinion about anything. He's just one of these people that is just gifted with a strong opinion instantaneously about almost anything. And I was not that way early in my career. I had to actually be like, well, I don't even know what I think about this song, or I don't even know what I think about this, the way this commercial ends. And I would have to really actually kind of go inside my brain and think, what do I think? Do I actually like that? If so, why? Or do I not? And it would take me a lot longer to arrive at what was my point of view on things than, say, somebody like my partner Eric. But over time, that muscle got much stronger. And I think that's what, when you say it comes with experience, I think that's what you're saying, is that you do get better at it. You do get, and especially when you eventually become a creative director, you have to make so many decisions. Like, the number of decisions you have to make in a day goes up by like 10 times the minute you become a creative director. And you're going to be a pretty bad creative director at the beginning, because most people, I'll say that. I certainly was. Because your muscle is weak. It's just too much. It's too many decisions, and you haven't built up your muscle to do that yet. But 6 months later and 12 months later, you'll be blown away by how much quicker and how much your ability has increased to know what your opinion is, to know what your point is, and to reach that conclusion quickly. But I would tell everyone, like, make sure you are pushing yourself to figure out what you really feel and what you really think. If you don't have it, if there's anything in your work that you're like, well, I don't know how I feel about it, figure out how you feel about it. Force yourself to figure out, do I like this? Do I think this is great? And that's how you get stronger. And that's how you gain more confidence in your own gut and what you think. Do you agree with what I just said, Emma?
I do agree. I think that's really good advice. I think it is a muscle. It's a muscle that you have to develop, like anything. Like, coming up with ideas is a muscle. Trusting your instincts is a muscle. And I am someone who, in the real world, I have a lot of opinions, and I know how I feel about a lot of things. But I think in the context of advertising, it was too intimidating. And there were too many experts around me and people who've been doing it for so long that suddenly I felt like I had no idea what I was doing. But yeah, you're right. Over time, you do it often enough that you learn to exercise that muscle and do it over and over and over again. And you realize too that, like, you don't have to have the exact right answer. And maybe one day you're going to think one thing, and then you're going to go back to it and you're going to be like, you know what, actually, I know I said that yesterday, but I thought about it and I changed my mind. I think it's this thing now. And you have to allow yourself, it's a lot harder to have an opinion about something when you think, I have to have that opinion forever. And it's the opinion that I'm going to, you know, they're going to hold me to. And if it's the wrong opinion, then it's going to be my big, you know, undoing. And it's like, no, you can, it's fluid. You know, this is all fluid and you can build your opinion over time. And, but yes, learning how to creative direct is like, it's a huge one. It's just like, how do I know that I'm right? And suddenly I'm in the position of being like, yes or no. You know, it's like, I don't know.
And I think,
it's helped hearing. Yeah. Yeah.
I think it's helpful to start, being your own creative director of yourself, of your own work, long before you become a creative director. And that's really what I was talking about when I said, like have an opinion, force yourself to have an opinion when you reach that phase of the creative process. Don't judge yourself when you're just generating ideas, but you know, don't just rely on your creative directors to tell you everything. Like, I don't know if anything's good. I just wait till my creative directors tell me what's good. Figure out what you think is good. And then of course listen to your CDs and, you know, take in what they have to say as well. But you'll become a better creative and eventually a better creative director by making yourself have those opinions.
Yeah. And if you don't really know what it feels like, if you're like, really, you're just like, God, I don't even know what I, like you were describing, like what I do like, you know, maybe a good litmus test is, do you get excited about it? Like if you have a couple of ideas in front of you, which is the one that brings you the most joy, you know, like to Marie Kondo, the situation, like, because at the end of the day, if you present a bunch of ideas to your CDs and you don't really get excited about any of them because you don't really know what you like, and then suddenly you're stuck making an idea you don't really enjoy and you're not really excited about, there's like 4 months of your life suddenly that you have to be making an idea that you don't totally get behind, you're not really that excited about, and it's probably not going to be great. You know, like if you don't know how to tell what you like or don't like just literally see what makes you excited on paper, you know, like this is just, there's a little more spark in this one. I kind of laugh at this one. So like go follow that direction, you know?
Yeah, totally.
Seven, I hate losing sleep. This shit is stressful. Here's how I don't die. Advertising is very stressful. It's really stressful for everybody. You have to make sure you do things to take care of yourself. Exercise. Phone a friend. Cry. I do this one a lot. See a therapist. Go to a movie. Find a hobby. That's me. Skateboarding in Montana. Which I never thought I would do at 34 years old, skateboard, but I wear my helmet and my wrist guards and everything. Take a nap. Have a life. You really just have to do things that offset the stress, because it's so easy for working to become your entire life. And I'm on sabbatical right now, and so I've sort of become acutely aware of like how many hours you do spend working. And if you don't do things to offset it, like if you don't take a break and you don't give yourself a weekend, the work is going to suffer. I can guarantee that it won't be better because you're miserable and exhausted. Burnout is a real thing, and it might not feel like you have the luxury to take a break, but you do. And if you don't feel like you do, then you should talk to your boss and say, I need to take a break. And I think it's important that in our culture, we try to cultivate more open communication about how people are doing. And it's a tremendous luxury to be in an industry where I can even go to my boss and say, hey, I need a break. I'm kind of burning out. Like I recognize that's like a very privileged position, but I do think it's important. And I think that everyone should try to take advantage of making sure they take care of themselves in this industry, for sure.
Yeah. I think it's actually quite practical that there's tons of data to show that your productivity just absolutely goes into the toilet after a certain number of hours of work and not getting sleep. And so I do think it's a balance of, you know, I don't know any of the most successful, like if you want to be among some of the best creatives in the world, I don't know any of those people who just work strictly 9 to 5 and they take every single weekend off. So it is going to take some work, but I think being really smart about how you work and making sure that you're taking breaks and making sure that you realize, you know what? I could sit here and I could stay here till 2 a.m, but my productivity is going to be so horribly bad. I'm much better off going home, getting some sleep, and hitting this in the morning with a fresh, you know, brain than just like trying to power through constantly. Sometimes, you know, if you got a pitch the next morning at 9 a.m., then you're going to have to, you got no choice because there is no more time. Yeah. But most of the time, there's time and we would be better off going and sleeping and letting our subconscious mind work on the problem and coming back like fresh and energized. And also, not everyone needs to be among the best creatives in the world.
Mm-hmm.
There's a whole spectrum of acceptable things for a great and meaningful life. And not everyone needs to be Emma Barnett and an absolute rock star. It's honestly, it's totally acceptable to just be really good at what you do and make great work. Maybe not as much great work as prolifically as some creatives who choose a different way, but that's acceptable. That's okay. And it's okay for the person who loves working and they want to work a little bit harder and a little bit more. And that's also okay. Everybody's got to do their own thing. But across the board, whoever you are, I totally agree with you. Taking care of yourself, taking enough breaks, getting enough sleep you're just better off. You're going to actually do better work.
Yeah.
If you're not burning yourself out.
And life changes, you know, there might be a couple of years where you really want to hit the grind, you know, and you want to focus on work a ton and it makes you happy. And then maybe there's a couple of years where you're like, know what? I actually need to take a step back and focus on myself more. And I'm happy to be a little less of a productive creative. How long did it take you to kind of, I mean, were you someone who like used to stay up grinding until 3 a.m. and then like when did you sort of learn this lesson?
I felt such imposter syndrome, particularly when I got to Wieden Kennedy. I mean, here's an example. My heroes, like in the entire industry, Jeff Kling and Jeff Williams were like two of the people that I most was obsessed with their work, and I knew their names. I didn't know them, but like I would go in award shows and I would look in the back and I would literally just look up their names because I just wanted to see everything that they ever made. And very shortly after getting to Wieden Kennedy, I was partnered with Jeff Williams. And so the pressure, the imposter syndrome that I felt. And so, yeah, I would stay up till 3 a.m. just trying to get to something that I thought, trying to impress Jeff Williams. And
yeah, I'm sure then you showed it to Jeff and he'd be like, well,
yeah,
I don't know.
I usually did not impress him. I would be there till 3 a.m. and then I'd get in the next day and I'd be like, hey, what'd you think of what I sent you? And he'd be like, I mean, I don't know. Seemed flat as a pancake to me. And or he would say, well, you know what this assignment needs? A really good writer like Jeff Kling. And I would be like, just crushed.
Oh,
just absolutely awful. Crushed. But then I would just try harder the next time. And then eventually, Jared Higgins came to me one day. He was working with Williams. And he said, I got to tell you this story. I wrote a bunch of headlines and I showed them to Jeff. And he looked at him and then he turned to me and said, you know what this assignment needs? A really good rider like Bagley. And I was like,
wow.
That is the greatest moment of my whole life. That means more to me than any award or anything. But yeah, I was a workaholic for probably my whole career. Probably let's say 14 years straight. And that was fine. I could have worked a lot smarter and there's things I would change in terms of just like, I would realize that you know, working until 2 a.m. was not productive, and maybe working till 9 p.m. would have been okay for me personally, but I should have probably gone home at 9. And most people should not work till 9 every night, by the way, but that worked for me and I loved it. And there was so much opportunity that I just didn't want to miss anything. And I was very prolific. And that was a time in my life when that worked for me personally. And I don't regret doing it, but I could not do that now. Like, I can't work like that now. I just don't. I'm in a different stage of my life. I'm 116 years old and I can't.
Me too.
I can't work like that. I mean, I literally just can't. I don't have the mental and physical energy that I used to just work that long and hard. So I have to give myself more breaks now. But everything, you got to just pay attention to yourself. Nothing is wrong for anybody in terms of the work, the way they work or how much they work. It's not wrong for people to work 35 hours a week if that's what they want. And it's not wrong for people to work 80 hours a week if they love it and if they're energized by it and if it's not hurting them to do that. Both are okay. I think what I tell people is just make sure that your goals line up with your behavior. So if you want to work 30 hours a week, that is 100% okay. But don't expect to become global CCO of Wieden & Kennedy because it's not going to happen. Like I've worked closely with the global CCOs and I have a lot of friends that are global CCOs. And that is an unrelenting job of nonstop work and problems and travel. And so just make sure that your behavior lines up with what you really want. The higher you go up, the more responsibility you're taking on and the more, you know, a global CCO they've got hundreds of jobs on their shoulders and they just are carrying so much responsibility that job cannot be done 9 to 5. It's just not possible. So Anyway, I'm rambling.
I mean, I think all of that makes sense. You know, I think you do have to kind of find what works for you. I think practically in the context of coming up with ideas, if you get stuck, you should stop.
Yeah.
And then you can come back to it. That's, I think, like a very important practical tool. And it seems counterintuitive, you know. It's like sometimes when you get into a fight with your partner, you want to double down on trying to fix it and get close, you know, talk it out. Blah, blah, blah. Sometimes if you just take some time away from each other for a few hours, it actually resolves itself, you know.
I think the advice of like
my own experience,
that relationship advice of like, don't ever go to bed angry. I think that's terrible advice.
Sometimes because, you go to bed angry. It's okay. Yeah.
Well, sometimes if it's 2 a.m. and you're arguing, you're not in a mental or emotional state to resolve this problem. You need to you need to go to bed and try to, you're probably going to have a better chance like making peace in the morning than you are just continuing to fight it out.
Yeah. I think coming up with ideas is the same thing. You're not going to, I've never cracked the brief at 2 a.m. when I'm exhausted. I just haven't. I've done it at 12:30 in the middle of the day when I've had some lunch and I exercise for a little while because I'm taking a break. And then suddenly I'm like, I thought of something. I got it. You know, or I've thought of it in a completely unrelated conversation with a friend over a drink after work. Or I'm at a movie and I'm like, that's the device. You know, like it's never when I'm, you know, there are moments where you're working and you're working really hard. Not, you know, it's not like I spend all my time just like going to movies and thinking of ideas. I do work very hard and I spend a lot of time with a partner, like grinding away at an idea. But if the both of you are just, you've hit a wall, take some time, do something nice for yourself, relax, eat something. I used to not feed myself properly too for many years. The running joke is that all I ate was carrots and popcorn because I feel like it was just something I could kind of like emotionally eat the whole time I was stressed out. And then as soon as I started actually eating real meals, my productivity went way up. I gotta say.
Yeah, I wouldn't even, I would tell people don't work longer than 90 minutes straight. Like, that's pretty good data on that. Like, take breaks periodically. Yeah. You know, like, go take a 15-minute break, go on a walk, go play some video games, go do whatever. But don't just work for 4 hours straight. That's probably not going to be productive.
Sorry for cutting Jason and Emma off there. If you want to listen to the full version of this podcast, check out schoolofastonishingpursuits.com and apply for Creative Mega Machine. If you get in, Jason Bagley himself will teach you the secrets and techniques to doing the best work of your life, getting better creative opportunities, making more money, and having more fun. We hope you enjoyed the first part of the episode, and we hope to see you in the second.